Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week, we are brought to you once again by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. You can direct any further questions on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. At least I sure hope we're your favorite hosts, because we only have one other and he's just a guest host, so.
And he is out.
Not out for good, maybe. I don't know. We didn't like take him out or anything. Just want to put that out there.
Allegedly.
Okay, I might not be in on the news. I don't know. We'll reconvene after the show and we'll let you guys know next week what's going on with that.
Yeah, perfect. So what should we talk about before the intro, since you've taken away weather, dirt biking, everything else? You have so many rules for me.
Rules? Well, this is supposed to be a motorcycle related show. There's nothing wrong with talking about the weather, I guess. But I don't want to get into like weather predictions or nothing. I ain't no freaking astro-entomologist or whatever they're called. What are they called?
What did you say? Because that wasn't it.
It wasn't English. I can tell you that.
Astromeniologist, environmentalist,
meteorologist is what a weather meteorologist person's called. But meteors, asteroids. Yeah, there's a relation there somewhere. Anyway.
I got to be careful. You'll take space off of my list. Let's just roll the intro.
All right. Sounds good.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
And we're back. What a week.
Hey, space isn't off the list, but to talk about space, you're gonna have to come up with what tire pressure you would run on a dirt bike if you wanted to ride in on the moon, because there's really gravity on the moon, but the gravity's lower, and so therefore what tire pressure would you need to run to. Imagine you're just going to the weekend for sand dunes. You're not really going to. I don't know if you check the tire pressure on your dirt bike if you're going to sand dunes.
I do. Unlike you. How much does air weigh?
How much does air weigh? Well, that's a great question. Not much.
I want to put a lot of air in so that it weighs it down on the moon.
Interesting. See, I would say weigh less air.
For what reason? Because...
Well, I don't know. You're in a vacuum on the moon.
And no, so that, how are you in a vacuum? What does that even mean? You've been watching too many space movies. We're in a vacuum.
There's no atmosphere in space. It's at a perfect vacuum, 36 inches of mercury.
Oh.
So on the moon, you're in a vacuum. So your outside pressure felt on the tire is extremely low. So if you have a higher pressure, that tire is going to burst. So that would be number one reason for lowering the tire pressure. Number two reason would be that hopefully the lower pressure would bring the weight down more.
I'm going to Google this crap.
Okay. That's why we're not a space show, and this is why we're a motorcycle show instead.
But we were talking motorcycles on the moon.
That's true. I was trying to keep it related. I think it was related. This is where the whole like great entertainment aspect comes in.
Yeah, well, wouldn't we have to actually go to the moon to try that?
Ooh.
We've been to the moon.
You know, the latest is that, and this is a rumor, you know, since we're not a rumor show, but we are, but we always tell you if it's a rumor or not. Rumor has it that one of Elon Musk's great projects is to make moon travel reasonable for the average person, if that makes sense.
Well, that's not a rumor. He's very open about that.
Okay. Well, I don't pay that much attention to the space stuff, and so I thought it was just a rumor, but I said, if you put a roller coaster out there or like an amusement park, and then I was like, I'd probably pay up to $5,000 to $10,000. You know, at some point in my lifetime, I could convince myself to pay around that much money to take a trip to the moon to ride a roller coaster there. Just to say, yep, I've ridden a roller coaster on the moon, which right now, obviously, there's no roller coaster on the moon. And it probably costs a little bit more than that much money to get out there. But
okay, let's switch this show to economics now, because I don't think they can build a spaceship big enough to justify hauling enough people to the moon at $5,000 to $10,000 a head to ever make that possible. You're gonna have
probably
to come
not. Amount. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about space travel. I just know they use a ton of fuel, and that they're not recoverable. Right? You shoot a rocket and it goes up, and then it just trashes itself and comes back down. But it's a very condensed, basic version of it, but that's essentially what happens. Although Elon Musk just kind of landed a rocket after shooting it up. So we're getting there.
Man, we really got off into space stuff.
Yeah, we were supposed to be talking about dirt bikes on the moon.
Well, let's just segue that into my space case MotoGP fantasy, and the fact that I'm floating in the atmosphere with no friends, no help. I'm starting to question the rules.
Whoever is in the top higher than we are in MotoGP fantasy on our league specifically, not that we're any better in any other leagues, but in our league, please let us know. I'm just curious. What are you doing? What did you do in the beginning? Why? Like, obviously, boosts play a role there. I'll say that our top two have no boosts left, but third and fourth still have two boosts left. I used a boost this past weekend, and I maintained my place exactly. And I didn't score. It looks like I'm in fifth place for highest points of the week. So it's not like I was even, crazy. And I boosted the guy that took second in both the sprint and the race.
Yep.
So I don't know. Don't know how it works, but here we are. But I think before we get into fantasy, we should talk about a rider tip.
Oh. And then
we can jump into MotoGP fantasy after that. What do you think?
I think we're already at fantasy.
Okay. We can just keep going down the fantasy route.
Well, just tell us who the winner is and then we'll move on.
All right. Well, this week's winner for MotoGP fantasy, based off the weekly points gained, and conveniently your leading point winner of the season. I was about to say champion, but I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, we have, can I get a drum roll? Triple Three Racing, once again, coming in with 203 points, which is a whopping 50 points above. Oh, nope, sorry. Down in 14th, Moto Asini from Italy. You got a 176. So not bad, but not 203. But for the rest of everyone listening, first, Triple Three Racing, reach out to us again at JK Moto Podcast. Send me a message. We'll hook you up with a prize for winning this week's weekly point lead. But for the rest of everyone else, since we give away spoilers here and everything else, might as well give away secrets, because, well, you could check it out yourself and find out. Both of those two people that I just mentioned are out of boosts completely, along with Team Thor. So you guys sitting in first and second, no boosts left. They're done. So if you guys are up there kind of near the top and you've saved them, we'll see if that plays out. There is a guy sitting in 7th and 8th who both have all three boosts left, which scares me because I only have one left and I'm not anywhere near 7th or 8th. So anyway, that is your fantasy for the week.
So that's good. So I get so excited for these rider tips because I don't get to see them ahead of time like you do. So I never know what you're shooting down the barrel. So we had to get that out of the way so you can have my undivided attention for the rider tip.
Okay, I get it. So you don't want to be distracted by moon landings or MotoGP.
Get that. Clear the head. Get the garbage out.
All right. Well, for all the listeners out there, I don't know what you might be doing right now. I don't know what time of day, what time of week, or what day of the week that you listen. But Cole's got his head clear. I've got my head clear. If you're driving down the interstate right now and you're just muscle memory on your way to work, listen up. If you're at home on the couch or you're vacuuming, turn the vacuum off for a second and listen up. We are bringing you this week's riding tip. And you should have
how many of our listeners are vacuuming?
At least two of them. leave us a comment down below if you're vacuuming. Anyway, this week's weekly riding tip is brought to you by Bedinger Motorsports, which is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. This week, Josh Bedinger himself has to say, back to the basics. Sometimes after riding for a season or two, we can get stuck in a rut or reach a plateau. It's good to take a day or at least a couple of sessions to slow down and take a look at your riding. Sometimes it's good to actually reinvent yourself and start from scratch. Have you slowly developed bad habits? Are you riding too far forward or back on the seat? Are you rotating your hips? Are you getting lazy in your body position? Are you and your body and shoulders rotated enough to have good vision? From a strategy side, are you pushing too hard on brakes, on braking and giving up strong exit drive? Are you known to be strong on the gas but weak on the brakes? Taking time to slow down, really reevaluate your riding, can help you overcome hurdles that you may have not even identified. Take a hard look in the mirror. You'll likely find things to fix that lead to lower lap times with less effort. Back to the basics.
Back to the basics.
Or reinvention.
Well, let's throw this one back on you. Look in the mirror, O Easton.
Uh-huh.
Are you developing good riding habits? Are you stuck in a rut? Are you out of that rut?
Well, that's a good question. I've been in a rut for a long time. I think that his advice is right on point, 100%. And whether you're racing, track riding, or even you're just a commuter, you just ride on the street. You've been riding on the, you know, commuting to work for 10 years. Take a look at your ride to work one day, because it could just be muscle memory. You could be not paying attention. You could be, nope, I know this route. I do it the same time every day. It's always the same this or that. Only time that it changes is if it rains or whatever. And, you know, I'd say that the tip applies literally no matter where you are on a motorcycle. There are things that are basics that you can't ever forget. And that if you go back and look at them and work on those, you can definitely make some progress wherever you are. And, you know, as far as keeping it kind of road related for once, you know, if you're riding on the road to work every day and you get that kind of in that muscle memory mode and you get lazy or whatever you want to call it, that could lead to safety issues, which, you know, the one day that you miss the 954th day in a row that you've been riding this route and you're just not paying attention and something happens, you know, we never want that to happen. As far as what he's talking about directly, the whole falling into a rut and plateau, 100%. It's really easy. I think it's also easy even when you are like making progress, for whatever reason, it's easy to be making some progress, but to be losing progress in other areas. If you say you take one lap, just as an example, you take one lap and you take your lap time from a 150 to a 147, right? That's great. It's a 3-second lap time. But if you can't tell yourself exactly how you got there, is it possible that you made some adjustments in two places that really brought up your time? And we're exaggerating and I'm making up numbers here, so whatever. But I think it's possible that you can make changes and make it, make progress in one area and lose it somewhere else. So just kind of like what he's saying, like, yeah, I got really, really strong on the brakes, but maybe I'm overbraking for every corner. Like, I brake really late, but I overbrake for every corner, and so I give up corner speed. Right. But I had another example, just left my head. But anyway, I think it's always good, especially, you know, mid-season or end of season. If you got things going good and you're not in a plateau, then, you know, keep on trucking. But if you find yourself in that plateau, it's great to just kind of sit down, super evaluate, be like, okay, when was the last time I was on the bike and actually thought about like where my head is, how far off the seat I'm actually getting? Have I fallen into just this? Yeah, I know how to ride the bike and I just do it. Because I can tell you from personal experience, you do get lazy. You lean off the bike less over time. You fall into this, I know I can go to this track, lay out this time. I know that time's fast enough. Or I can do these things in this corner. I can always get someone here because I'm really strong in this one spot. But you could be missing other spots where you've just kind of become lazy and complacent.
I have an example.
Okay, what do we got?
I don't know how much this, I guess it relates to reevaluating, you know, where you're at or what you're doing. But the thing that keeps this sport interesting is every track you go to, every new track you go to, it's not designed necessarily to be easy. It's designed to trick you. It's designed to slow you down. It's designed to be hard to get around generally.
Should be. The best tracks are supposed to be like that. Yeah.
So that being said, I noticed a while back that, you know, treating a corner where I aggressively turn in, I turn in quickly. I like the feeling that that gives me on the bike.
Okay.
And it's great for some corners, but it's not the right way to do other corners.
Yeah, makes sense.
Heavy brake, quick tip in. But I have been in a place before where I got in the habit where if it's good for one corner, it must be good for all the corners, right? So it just becomes like your go-to move.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the way, you realize that just because it's good for one corner, it's not good for all the corners. So I guess that would be an example that relates a little bit as far as you picked up some time in a couple corners by learning how to do that in a different way, but then it bleeds over and you're doing it in every corner and it's not helping in the other corners. It's actually hindering.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. You know, take racetrack X corner 3, you know how to do that perfectly and it works well enough for every corner. So you feel like you're doing great, but you could be riding each individual corner a little different.
Yep.
I think, you know, I had some conversations with some people this weekend, and I think that riding in a bunch of different places helps out with that a lot because eventually you've seen just about every corner, if that makes sense.
That's why it's good to get in traffic.
That makes sense too. Kind of opens your eyes to, I have to take a different line, and then you're like, wait a second.
Yeah. Once you do it, then you're like, that was possible, and then that becomes something in your bag of tricks.
Yeah. New achievement unlocked.
New achievement unlocked. Easier to, I mean, it's a tool that's needed, especially in racing, right?
Yep. Well, anyway, I think we got a little bit off from maybe what Josh originally intended, but I don't think we were on the wrong track. But just to close that out, back to the basics. It's never a bad idea to do exactly what he's saying. While you're out there, take a session where you actually not worried about lap time, not worried about speed, but you think about everything that you do. I think that's really the biggest thing is being able to have the mental capacity and mental focus to, okay, where is my arm? Where am I looking? Where are my feet? You know, when am I actually releasing the brake and getting back on the throttle? When I get on that throttle, how long do I wait before I actually pull it? Like, there's all these different mechanics of riding that many of them become quote unquote second nature to us, that we forget that you can always adjust them.
Right.
You can always make little tiny changes and those add up over time. And a 10th in every corner on a 10 corner on a 6 corner track is a second. So if you find a 10th in every corner on a normal track, that's 2 seconds right there. So anyway, to close out the tip, sorry, I forgot, but I didn't forget. If you're looking to ride with Josh Bittinger at Bittinger Motorsports, he offers some sweet coaching down at MSRH. Hit him up. We'll have a link down in the description for his website. Also, go catch him on Facebook, Instagram, and keep an eye on him. Amazing coaching for the pricing that it is. You'll learn a lot, especially if you're new. But also, I'd say if you're kind of to go along with this tip, if you've been riding for a long time and you're stuck on that plateau, maybe getting a day or two of coaching just to help you get back to the basics easier may not hurt. So, anyway, that is the weekly Reddit tip.
Thank you, Josh. And now.
Landing
on the moon. No, yeah. And now. I got to ask you some questions.
What do you got?
So, you got to do some riding this weekend.
I did, in fact.
And the first thing I'm going to point out.
Mm-hmm.
Hold your hands up. Let me see your hands. What are all those? I know for those that are listening can't see, but what are all those calluses on your hand there, boy?
Well, you know, you go through patches of not riding for a while, and then you go and you do a 3-day weekend where you're pushing for yourself pretty hard and working pretty hard, and all of a sudden you get some calluses or you pop some blisters. And you go out 2 weeks later and you do the same thing only one day, and they stick around. They don't really leave. So yeah. They also get when you're changing a tire or two and helping some buddies out, and everyone knows you, even if you don't freaking touch your bike, I don't care. You go into a weekend, you don't even like touch the bike besides in your gear riding, your hands are going to come out dirty, right? Now, when you're loading all your own stuff and unloading all your own stuff and changing people's tires and putting gas in and all that other things, your hands get dirty. When you have calluses that are ripped open, the dirt gets in there. So, yeah, that's what my hands are. Yeah.
My gosh. Okay, well, you had the opportunity to go ride this week, and I didn't know what you wanted to say about that, so you're just going to answer my questions.
Okay. All right.
Question like one. Where did you ride this weekend?
Hi, I'm the guest. My name is Easton. I'm the guest this week.
There are no guest introductions. Just answer the questions.
I had the awesome opportunity to do a track day with N2 at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta.
Also known as the place that One Fast Move was filmed.
For the most part, but we found out from a listener last week, thank you for the input, that a little bit of it was also filmed at, hang on.
Roebling.
That's not what he said.
Roebling.
No.
The other one in Florida.
Atlanta Motor Speedway is the other filming location. But yes, the majority of One Fast Move was filmed at Road Atlanta. I was actually there with a movie star this weekend. There was one of the members that works with N2 and races down there was in the movie. And I think they did a Saturday, Sunday. I was just there Saturday due to some work things and whatnot, scheduling and between me and the buddies and everything else. But they played, after we left, they played One Fast Move at the track that night for everyone that was still in the pits. Not sad I missed that, but yeah.
Then get some funny rider tips. Okay, stay on topic here. I'm asking the questions.
Okay, all right. You ask the questions.
So you were in Atlanta, a hallowed racetrack for motorcyclers.
Indeed.
What did you think of the track? That's your first time riding there, right?
Yeah.
You've been there to watch a Moto America event in the past?
I have.
But this was your first time on the asphalt. So, overview of the track. What'd you think?
That asphalt's a little bumpy. We'll start off there. There are a couple spots where it's like, if you don't take the right line, you end up on some bumps. And it's bumpy enough that you're kind of like, ooh, all right, you know, doing the old Western riding, if you will. That facility, you know, I've like you mentioned, I watched it in Moto America. I went there live, and you only, if you watch a race from one spot, you don't get a feel for the whole track. You don't get an appreciation for it.
It's true. Where we watch, true.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, road courses. That's why NASCAR gets so many more fans in America. It's because it's so easy to see the whole track when it's just a circle. When it's going to go left, right, up, down, all over the place, it's hard to watch. And at Road Atlanta, that is exactly what it freaking does. Earlier in this show, this episode specifically, you mentioned that some racetracks are built to trick you. And I mentioned that the good ones are built to be extremely difficult to ride. Once you start to figure them out, they're still difficult, but man, is it fun. And I would say that Road Atlanta is definitely one of those tracks that when you first show up and you're in for something else, it's a treat. It is insane. And I can tell you after my first session, it did rain that morning. Like right before the riders meeting, it downpoured for 15 minutes. And by the end of by the time the first session started, it was mostly cleared up, but there is one portion of the track that sits in the shade until about 10:30 when the sun actually comes up and hits it. And that portion was still kind of looked like it could be wet. It could also just be that the asphalt's old and has patches, but it's also shady. And so it's kind of weird. Honestly, wouldn't have thought about the shade until someone else. I asked, you know, a guy went out before me, and I was like, are there any puddles out there? That's all I really wanted to know. I was like, is there anywhere where I can't take the line that I need to because of puddles? And he said, no, you're fine. It's just a little sketchy in turn one and up to turn six because of the shade and the water. I was like, whoa. So that kind of threw me off. I'll say that, you know, initial impressions, the facility is kind of sweet, but it's also, it feels old. And I felt that at Moto America, and I felt that here. Like, we showed up the morning of, and I was running the generator, and I looked around for power, and they have some power in the paddock, but it is the most random setup ever. There's just like a couple random poles randomly there that have power, but it's also like you have a box and then an extension cord hanging out of the box, and it's just a 3-prong extension cord just hanging out of the box ready to go. So I was like, whatever. All right, I'm not going to route a 200-foot extension cord over to this random box that's already been used by someone else. But anyway, it like the facility is great, but it feels old. It's not super top notch facility. I didn't really get a chance to check everything out either because I showed up in the morning, left that evening. I was just in the pits all day. And in the humid weather, you don't often drink as much water as you should because you feel wet, so you don't dry out. And so when you're not drinking water, you don't have to use the facilities as often either. So I think we had a porta potty right across from us, and I used it once, and that was all I really got out of the facilities. Anyway, the part that matters, the racetrack. Dude, I came in from that first session and didn't know if I'd go back out. Like, not actually, but I was like, I don't know how you figure this place out. I don't know how you have fun here. I don't know. It is insane. You know my riding style, I think. Call it style. I don't know the best word for it, but I'm very ginger on the throttle.
Cautious.
Generally. Yeah, cautious, overcalculated, whatever you want to call it. But let me put it this way. I'm not trying to wheelie out there everywhere I can. Well, I came in and immediately turned my wheelie control up to the highest setting, and the rest of the day, my front wheel was still coming off the ground. I was purposely short shifting in spots and putting my weight over the front of the tank just to keep that front tire on the ground. I also tightened my steering damper up by about three clicks just to keep it, because that track has multiple places where you are up over a hill at the top of your rev range or in the middle, wherever you think is the best place to wheelie a bike. That's exactly where you crest the hill and that front tire is just up. It is insane. I can also say that, you know, when you first get to a track and you're doing your first lap, second lap, third lap, you're learning where your eyes are going to go. You're looking for markers and everything else. There are a lot of places because of the elevation of that track where you get sunk in so quickly and so easily. And until you force yourself to look way further out, but you're not like looking down a straight, you're looking up, like up to the next hill and over the top of the next hill to the next blind spot, basically. And you're just watching blind spot. Then you're using markers of the blind spots to set yourself up so when you come over them. But it is, I don't know. There's no words for it. You know, it's been on my bucket list for a long time to ride there, period. It's now on my bucket list 100% to race there. Absolutely want to do it. To anyone that hasn't ridden Road Atlanta, like, you know, make sure everything's in check first, but go do it. It's something else. It's not like anything that I've ever ridden before that. You've ridden Thunder Hill with me, Cole. You know what it's like. Road Atlanta is Thunder Hill on steroids, but shorter. So Thunder Hill was like a long track. There was a lot to it. There's right. A couple spots that are a little like, ooh, okay, that's different. It's a little sketchy. Let me see if I can figure this out. Road Atlanta, it's that the entire time. And it's shorter, condensed. It's everywhere you're at. It's just brakes or gas the whole time.
But we have long straightaways there, right?
Yeah. The back straight isn't really a straightaway. And there's a hill in the middle of it. And then the last corner, turn 9, you're in sixth gear. And if you've got the cojones for it, you're just pinned and leaned full over. I never quite had that. I was gaining, like almost every session, I was adding about 5 miles per hour to the speed I was willing to take through there. And I was still getting blown by. I'll admit that all day. I didn't have impressive times out there. It wasn't doing anything crazy, but it is. And that's also something I personally struggle with is high speed cornering. Like you get me on some technical stuff and I get pretty comfortable pretty quick. I'm good at kind of what you mentioned earlier during the tip is hard braking, slam it in, bring it out, get on the gas, you're gone, right? But like long cornering where you don't brake going in, specifically that where you're not supposed to brake or let off the gas, you just tip the bike in. It was great for me for that because I kept working on that, right? Every session it'd be add a couple more. Let's get more. You can do it. You're good. You just got blown by. Obviously the bike sticks. You can do it. The front straight isn't as long as you would think, which I know is breaking early going into turn one. Turn one is a freaking doozy. And turn one is, I think, like the biggest vision problem I had all day because I'd stare at the apex and the rest of it's all uphill. And so, like I said, like it's not only your eyes want to look at it, but also literally the G-force. When you move your eyes up from down at the apex to the top of the hill, you're fighting some like pretty hefty sinking in G-force just to get your head up and out of that gap. So you gotta be careful of these questions.
Right now.
Oh, there you go. I could talk about the first session I had there for probably a couple weeks if you wanted me to, but
I don't.
That's good. That's good. I don't really want to either, but yeah, I mean, Road Atlanta is it's a monster. And anyone that's ridden there that can back me up on that, please do down in the comments. I know I was talking to a buddy that has ridden there once. His first time was a pretty large race weekend. You know who you are. And he texted me that morning. He's like, "Get out on track yet?" And I called him after the first session. I was like, "Dude, what is this place? Like, what, what do you, I don't even know what to ask you for. Like, hey, how do I do this or this? And just how do you road Atlanta?" And he's like, "Right. Yeah, good luck." And there's a lot more to the conversation than that, but very similar. Come to find out, we had very similar feelings after your first session. I think that's how basically everyone is out there. Whether or not, like, it doesn't, I don't even think it matters quite what your level is. It's just different. It's nuts. So, also, if you haven't ever used a rear brake on a motorcycle before, you're going to Road Atlanta. If you're in a, like, you're a quick guy, you're a fast guy, and you've got the guts, be ready to use that rear brake at Road Atlanta. 100%.
Like one fast turn.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to back it in everywhere you go. Just freaking slide that rear around. No, no, just to keep the freaking front tire on the ground. Because otherwise you're going to crest a hill and you're going to be on the gas and you're going to wheelie over the hill. And by the time your front tire sits down, you're going to be like, "Oh, I should have braked about 10 feet ago." Okay. So.
Man, it looks so simple without any elevation in there.
That's what. So I'll be honest with you. Before the race round we had down in Utah, you and I got on and played ride four or whatever, rode a little bit of USB East or UMC East, and that was sweet. Kind of actually, like, at least gives you an idea for what it looks like. I rode Atlanta on ride five for a week and a half on a multitude of different bikes just to try and get the lines down, to try and get an idea for what it would look like. The elevation in the video game is nowhere near what it actually is at that track. Does that show the elevation pretty decent? I can't. There's
no
decent blur on it. No. Okay. It is. It's just. It's something else. It's awesome. It's blind everywhere. It's up or down the whole time. The only flat part is literally the front straight, but it's down into it and up out of it. So, whatever. And it's not even that long. It's nuts. If you get the opportunity, basically, go check it out. You won't regret it. I've had a friend that has ridden at the Ridge and a couple other racetracks, and the Road to Atlanta is his new favorite. He also then bend it at the end of the day. So, you know.
Yeah. Is that who I think it is?
Probably, yeah.
Son of a B, man. Knock that off. So, let's talk about, so your bandwidth was being sucked up because a new track, you know, especially when you talk about like your first session, never seen the track before.
Mm-hmm.
But coming off of a newly minted race license and showing up at that track, and we all heard the comment that you would like to go race there.
Mm-hmm.
What is this doing to your track day desire? What feelings are you having?
In what method?
So I explained to you a few times, but when I started racing, a track day became like something with no prize at the end of it. It was fun, don't get me wrong. Great place to hone skills and everything, but it was like a unfulfilled weekend because there wasn't
so, something
leading up
yeah.
to
it. I get what you're saying. I don't think I have those feelings. Mostly because I raced 2 weeks ago and I got a race license. Cool. I got some medals. Sweet. I'm not there yet at all. I know that. I've always known that. But now we have a reason to be there. So we got to figure out how to get there. So any seat time I can get, I'm going to freaking take it. Anything I can afford, essentially. And so a track day for me is exactly that. I came to Road Atlanta. I knew there would be a couple spots that I probably wouldn't be comfortable. So I set my eyes on those spots. I got out on the track. I found out the whole freaking track is somewhere I'm not comfortable. So we set our eyes on the whole thing. And throughout the day, you know, there's two corners there, corner six and seven, that are literally just right hand. You come in, you brake hard, you do the corner, you get out, you get on the gas. You come in, you brake hard, you do the corner, you get out, you get on the gas. Those corners, I didn't work on that much. All I was working on those corners was letting off the brakes a little earlier or braking a little later, or basically just trying to shave just little tiny bits, just getting a little bit more comfortable slowly up in that corner speed. But everywhere else on that track is something that I either haven't seen before or know that I'm not good at. And so just throughout the day, I was just building and building and building. And I get to a spot that I knew I wasn't doing well. There's still plenty out there that I'm like, I left a lot on the table there. And I know that, you know, it'd be great to have a couple more days there, but I think I made some great progress. And I haven't necessarily come across the feeling that you have towards track days.
Well, let me clarify just a little bit though. I'll use every excuse I can to get on a bike. You know that I'm still coming out there, jumping on a bike. It's just harder to, it gets harder and harder to get excited for those days when there's not a prize at the end.
That's fair. That's fine. And I don't know. I don't know how to necessarily help you with that. I don't know if I'll run into that in the future. Maybe, you know, I haven't really actually raced yet. Sure, I did one race weekend with all of three races, two of which were actually sanctioned. And so, yeah, I'm not chasing a championship. I'm not out there running a full race weekend, doing the whole get up. I don't have that experience. And so maybe that'll change for me. But I do still have a goal that I don't know that I'll ever leave, is just to stack up as many racetracks in America as I can, whether racing or just riding, even just seeing them. I don't need to go out there and set a crazy lap time, just to see the different layouts. And I think this weekend proves to me that goal is definitely still worth keeping, because yeah, I mean, Road Atlanta, like I said, even if you're not running the greatest time out there, which, you know, that's me, I started off at a very, very bad time. But as I started to piece that track together and pick up the pace a little bit, it went from scary, sketchy, doesn't make any sense, to it started to flow. It started to work. There started to be a, you're on here, you're off here, you're going up, you're going down, your eyes are moving over here. And to go back to some other points too, you know, I found myself throughout the day, as I got more tired, I got more lazy, and my eyes would get stuck somewhere, and I wouldn't be on the gas like I should, and saw some times drop. And then by the end of the day, I kind of picked myself back up and said, nope, just go ride your ride, and made some good progress. But
who was the track day org you rode with?
So I was riding with N2 track days. I've ridden with them before at every track day I've done with them before has been with you. Rode with them at a Roebling, and then rode with them at a Carolina Motorsports Park, CMP. So they are one of the orgs that does require you to start in novice, and then you can't move up in groups until you get the bump, as they call it.
Right.
And you have to be evaluated for your bump, which is interesting. I'm not super against that rule, but I'm not super for it either. Like if I was running a track day org, I wouldn't have the rule, but I understand why they have the rule. I can, you know, I can see why. I think the bigger issue that I think I have, and not even just with that org, there's many orgs that run this rule, but the rule of you can only pass on the straight, compared to a couple orgs that we know personally that try to teach you how to pass safely rather than just saying you can't do it.
Right.
I think that is a much better path to take, and N2 doesn't, unfortunately, doesn't do that. And so it leads to maybe some people making some bad decisions and putting bikes down in the second to last session because they get fed up with it. But I don't know. You know, that's just a wild idea. I don't know.
Okay. Enough about that. Just curious who you rode with. Well, sounds like it was fun. You'll have to get me out there. I'd like to try that one for sure.
I think, I'm pretty sure Road Atlanta has been on your list also. I think anyone that goes there that's ridden, it doesn't matter what else in the U.S. you've ridden, it will open your eyes to some, like, it felt like quite literally some guy owned a couple hundred acres and would ride around on his dirt bike and was just like, this is intense. People will love it. And then paved it and called it good. And it feels old, but not in like a bad way. You know, like this is old fashioned racing. It's not some like new works with you racetrack that's great and super fun and easy to learn. It's computer like
generated.
Yeah, you gotta freaking want it. And you gotta be okay wanting it. So it's something else. I recommend it to anyone. If you haven't ridden there, go ride there. It's brutal. It is also I've been riding motorcycles all summer. I was more worn out from that one day. And I skipped the second session because I lost a gas cap. Which we can talk more about that if you want, but I didn't make it out for the second session. So I only rode 6 out of 7 sessions, and I was more tired there than I was after the entire weekend at USBA 2 weeks ago. So
I think we should start a new segment for our friend Wyatt.
Uh-huh.
it's a 600 track, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, the straights aren't really that long, and there's not really any. Yeah.
It's like, just a 600 track.
Yeah. You just wind it up. Just, you need that extra couple thousand RPM, that higher horsepower. That track loves it. So, yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about your weekend before we move along?
No, I did mention that I lost a gas cap. If you have a gas cap that doesn't like physically screw in and lock in place or has a key, make sure when you put your gas cap in that it is in. And also, it might be, if you're a spare parts person, might be worth carrying a gas cap around. Not the whole thing, but just the cap itself.
Okay, now I'm curious. Now I'm curious. The listeners at home be curious too. You have a screw-in gas cap.
I do not. I have a push, quarter turn twist, let go.
And you lost it.
I did. It flew out of the bike while I was out on track. Before the first session, I checked my fuel. And like I opened it up, and I was shaking the bike just a little so I could hear it. I was like, all right, there's enough in there. We're going to go out nice and slow for this session anyway. It's still cold, rained. Cool. If I have to come in on a gas light, that's okay. I like to keep that bike lower on fuel after some things I figured out. So I put the cap back on. Now, this cap specifically has an O-ring underneath it. It's a little too big, it seems, because I always find myself, if I don't put it in there perfectly, I have to kind of like squish the O-ring in to make sure it actually goes in. And I think what happened was that I didn't actually get it fully in. It felt like it seated, like I pushed it in, but I've always had kind of trouble with it. And this time it was actually trouble. And I came back in on a fuel light, but also a checkered flag. So I made it to the end of the session. Like, I saw my fuel light, and then I come around and see the checkered. I was like, oh, well, perfect. I was coming in anyway. And like, I come in and I was like doing some stuff. You know, you get your helmet off and everything that you thought about you needed to do kind of goes away. You forget about everything. You just want to get some water and sit. And then I was like, oh no, I got to get fuel. And I turn around. And I'm like, why is my gas cap already off? And I started looking around and I was like, nope, I definitely didn't take it off. You know, initial thought was like, I just took it off and forgot. Nope, absolutely not. It was gone. So I asked almost everyone in the paddock. No one had an extra gas cap that would fit that. The guy that was selling extra parts didn't bring anything for Aprilias, even though he's a huge Aprilia parts dealer. There's just not enough of us at the track. So he's like, sorry. And so we got a little creative. Fuel level stayed nice and low all day, and we didn't spill any fuel on the track or ourselves, and we finished out the day strong. So,
man, maybe I'll ask you about that creativity later.
Yeah, we'll keep that one off the air. But I will say that
you're a menace to society.
Hey, one of the control riders came by and saw it and said, "Oh yeah, I've done that before, man. Yep, you do what you got to do." And I was like, "All right, well, I guess we're good." So,
was it duct tape?
There was duct tape involved. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
And absorbent material, yeah. Don't worry, I got warned. They're like, you'll smell it, but really you'll get like cold, and then you get hot, and then you need to get off the track as fast as you can, and keep the bike as upright as possible. And I'm like, okay, sounds good. So I'm not the only one out there, and I never had those feelings. Like I said, we kept the level pretty low, so I never. Never came out, but
banned. Yeah. You're gonna be banned.
Yeah. No, probably not. Just if you're looking for a new spare part to add to your spare parts box, that might be one worth adding. So anyway, yeah, that was my weekend. Great weekend at Road Atlanta. Definitely worth checking out. And still pretty sweet to watch Moto America from. I think it was I don't know which one I like better between that and Barber. I think Road Atlanta, you're in the infield, and so you can literally go anywhere on the track, period. And I think it's a little easier than doing that at Barber. So,
move it along. We're done with Road Atlanta, but since we started talking about Moto America, let's talk about some Moto America.
Well, there we go. Where were they this week, Cole?
The car racetrack in Mid Ohio.
Where I gotta look this up real quick and see where actually in Ohio it is, because
downtown Chicago, or wait, that's Illinois, downtown
Mid Ohio car course maps. I just gotta make sure it's actually in the middle of Ohio. It is. It's almost dead center. It's a little high, but okay. All right, cool. Sorry, just had to. We are also now a geography podcast.
Yes. Perfect. So at Mid-Ohio, first time they've been there in 10 years. First time Moto America's actually been there.
It was back when they were AMA.
It didn't exist back then. So I was intrigued with the course. I mean, I can't wait to talk to some of the people that were riding there this weekend because I want to see what their feelings were on the track. Because to me, from the TV, it looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the timesheets right now, and I didn't realize, at least in race two, race one looks, did race one get rained out?
There was rain coming in and out. There was drama.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. But race two looks like it was a freaking good race, at least for the top couple guys. I didn't watch it. I'll be honest. Sorry.
Race two was awesome.
Okay.
Race two was awesome. Race one was good, but of course the
theatrics,
the competition level wasn't quite there in race one that we seen in race two, but throughout the day, throughout the weekend, I should say, there was a lot of example, the super sport class, they got to go out and do the track familiarization laps.
Okay.
I'm really hating that.
Like on, and that's extra compared to normal practice and whatnot.
Yeah. So if you, again, not trying to be the Weather Channel, but if you go back and look at the Moto America rounds this year.
Oh yeah. I don't know why that was. I know what you're talking about now. Yeah. Keep going. You're good.
If you go back and look, though, what a weird year, because there's always going to be a round that is affected by rain.
Should be, yeah.
I mean, and it's cool. Same, I'm going to say, in Supercross. Sorry, I know I'm not allowed to talk dirt bikes, but to have like one really rained out mud round is awesome. But when you get three of them in a row, it gets old really fast because you just want to see the bikes run into their full potential.
Right.
This year in Moto America, I think there has only been one round that hasn't had rain affect at least a class this year, which has been odd because they're all over the country.
Yeah.
So anyway, keeping with the theme, there was rain affecting things, but the poor super sport guys. So they sent out the Junior Cup guys and they started crashing all over the place. So they just pulled them off, and then they sent out the super sport guys and let them do a track familiarization, seven laps or whatever. They could go right around.
Yeah.
There was like four people crashed on that while they were out there just checking out the track. So they were waiting. They were trying to dry the track, and then pretty soon they just kicked them off the track and said, the baggers had a TV slot that they couldn't miss, so they brought out the super bikes before the baggers, but to stay on schedule so they could hit the TV times.
Times were specifically for the baggers?
Yes, there's a TV time. Huh. You know, they have contracts with TV stations and whatever, and the only people those guys want to watch are the top-tier class or the baggers. So they booted the super sport guys to the end of the day. And so they did the big races in the middle of the day on time. And then they sent those other classes out to finish afterwards. But then on Sunday, there was a red flag in the super sport race. There was a red flag about three laps in, bike blew up, threw oil all over the track.
Sheesh.
So they sat around talking about it and then pretty much came out and said, we're sending the super sport bikes back again because they couldn't get the track cleaned up fast enough. And they said, we have TV time to hit. So right after they made that announcement, all of a sudden all the super sport bikes are running out on track and they're like, change of plans. We're just shortening the race. So those guys kind of got screwed with.
Interesting.
Over the whole weekend, which, you know, it is what it is. But
yeah.
Super Sport Championship is tight. PJ Jacobson and Matty Schultz. They're they are battling, and it's going back and forth every week. Quite an exciting class at the front, at least.
It looks pretty. Again, just the timesheets from that weekend alone look pretty freaking good. So,
but then we have the superbikes.
The superbikes,
which, what a crazy year, honestly. What a crazy year, because so we're going to a track. Sean Dillon Kelly is riding out of his head, looking like a superstar all weekend.
Okay.
If you think about it, Sean Dillon Kelly, a lot of his career has happened over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And he's had decent showings at most rounds that we go to or whatever. But this is the first time that he was going to a track where most people
haven't been there.
And all of a sudden he's at the top of all the timesheets because they're starting on equal footing.
Weird.
And that continued through the weekend. And it was pretty neat to see his performance. He did great. Learned this weekend that in the break that they had, Jake Gagne did not have a surgery.
That was an arm pump surgery specifically that he was looking into getting, correct?
Yeah, but he's already had multiples. It sounds like he made the decision to not get it in the off season. So I don't know what effect that was having or not having, but you know, he came out and had a fairly dismal showing. Still hanging out second in points, because he just keeps showing up every week.
Yep.
But things have changed. Things have changed. It's no longer the Gagne show.
Yeah, and it's no longer two Yamahas in the front. I'm looking right here, you know, race two, the one that wasn't affected by rain, Ducati, Beamer, Ducati, Yamaha, Beamer, Suzuki, Yamaha, Honda. Like, that's a solid mix. I'll give you that all day. That's awesome.
Quick shout out, that Honda.
Uh-huh.
That Honda crashed, got up again, and drove across the finish line. That's Gillum.
Ashton Yates was in ninth on a Honda.
Where was Gillum?
Down in 13th. So it's
so poor guy finally got his superbike from Honda. You know, it's only a year late.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing really well, and he crashed it. Picked it up, drove right across the finish line before corner one. After going over the finish line, he then pulled it off and set it against the wall and walked back. But he made sure to finish.
Well, hey, there you go. Oh, that's good. It's interesting what you mentioned, though. I wanted to ask you, because I'm not a big Moto America history guy. I think you've read a lot more into Moto America, AMA, and like since you started watching, you've gone back and learned a lot more than I have. But you know, Sean Dillon Kelly shows up. No one else, for the most part, has ridden there. Josh Herron's been in the sport for a minute. Has he been in the sport long enough that he has ridden at Mid-Ohio before?
Oh, yeah. He's rode everything twice. So they made a comment during the race that Josh Herron won his last championship 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Dillon Kelly was 11. So
if that
puts it in any perspective.
Yeah. All right.
You know, Josh Herron, love him, hate him. Yeah, he's got a lot of haters. He's got a lot of hardcore fans, you know, like, but I don't care who you are. You got to give it up to the guy. I don't care if he's on the highest paid, best team, fastest bike. I don't care what excuse you want to make. That dude is out there giving it his all.
Mm-hmm.
He's older than all the other riders out there. Something has changed, and you can just see the way he rides. He can taste it. He's back in it. His headspace is right. And for a lot of years watching him, he always had flashes of talent. You know,
yeah.
You would see, I mean, the guy's amazing on a bike, but
yeah, it'd be like a race here, a race there, where it's just like, whoa, there he is. He's doing great. Maybe he's got it. And it just kind of,
yeah, but this year you can see the way he's riding. He's confident. He's pushing. He's he believes he can win every race out there, and he's riding accordingly. And it's, I don't care who you are, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's nice to see it, you know, finally all pay off. I think I started watching when he was back on the Shibe Racing BMW. Mm-hmm. He went from there to Yamaha, and it felt like he was doing a lot off the track, but not quite showing up on the track as much as they wanted, and lost that ride. When he went down into Super Sport, I'll be honest, I was like...
career done.
Yeah, I figured that was just kind of, I'm going to try and make a little bit more money and get out of here. To watch him win that was still... the only reason I don't want to give him credit, and I give him credit. He won the freaking championship. Great. Good job, Josh. You did it. You got my... still a Josh fan at the end of the day also. But the reason that I was kind of holding back is I was like, okay... the amount he was winning by made it look like it was just like not going to translate well up to the superbikes, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like, yeah, obviously he was doing well in that class, but that doesn't mean that you're going to do well in the class up. It just might mean that the rest of the class isn't as good. Maybe. Well, and then last year was kind of one of those years that, you know, you see some talent here, you see some talent there, but there's definitely some other spots where you're like, not quite, you know, you're bummed out, or he just gets pounded down a little bit too much for a little too long, and it just kind of seems like the end of the season is like, okay, still gonna try, but not that hard. But this year, I think because he's up there fighting, he's been able to keep that spark going, keep the fire lit. Yep. Got two more rounds left. I think he can do it. Just a prediction.
I think he can do it also, but he did say. So we didn't specifically say that, but race one mm-hmm. and two, Josh Herron won both races this weekend. Race two, it was Josh Herron, Sean Dillon Kelly, Cameron Beaubier.
Correct.
The top three. In winner's circle or whatever, when he was thanking everybody today, he looked over at the Warhorse team and he said, hopefully they'll let me ride this thing for five more years, which made me laugh because I believe both of them are still in contract negotiations. Ducati recently said they would stay in Moto America. They committed two bikes for the next 5 years. So he's trying to secure a seat. So,
makes sense.
You know, the other interesting thing just for me, you know, not to make it the Josh Herron show, but if you watch him on his social media and everything 2 years ago, I think he was almost done. Like, mentally, he was, you know, making comments about wanting his son to see him win a race, mm-hmm. you know, and be old enough to remember it. So he was trying to just hold on long enough for that. And then the Ducati thing happened, and it's really resurrected, I think, his feeling and his love for the sport. And it's fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it's been super good. I agree with you. I think, yeah, that season in Super Sport probably helped a lot. You know, it might be, like, he was freaking unstoppable, untouchable out there that season. Like, there was no stopping him. So he got to do all the celebration wheelies. You know, he's winning everything, doing it. I can see how it revamps the spark, and I think it absolutely did. Anyway, you're right. I agree.
So, two more things I want to touch on with the Moto America.
Yes, sir.
Do me a favor and go to the first race, first Super Sport race.
Super Sport race one results.
Yep. Who's that third place guy?
Larry.
Larry what?
Pegram?
Close enough. You know that gentleman is 52 years old.
Is that where that meme came from?
52 years old.
I seen an internet meme, a meme today, as the old people say, as he would probably say, about, like, I don't even remember, but it was just some quote from him, and it had a picture of a bike, and it was like, blah, 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 blah. and still kick all of your butts at 52 years old or something like that. It was like Larry Pegram or whatever.
Yeah, so
that makes sense.
Yeah, they're saying that the guy resurrected, like, he's old school enough that he still remembers those memes are coming from. They're saying he's old school enough that he still remembers you're supposed to flip the guy off next to you, or the you're not supposed to be the guy's you're racing's friend. He's old school where you didn't share secrets. Everybody's not friends in the paddock. You fight. And yeah, he's making some comments about how bad everybody else must suck if they're letting a 52-year-old guy. But I obviously appreciated the story because it gave an old bugger like me hope, not to race in Moto America, but just in general, right? It's like, yeah. I can root for that guy for that reason.
He can get out there and
yeah. To be fair, that was a mixed condition race, and he was on rain tires. And
he's old. He just knew. He's got that old man sense. It's going to rain today.
Just so listeners don't think I don't fully acknowledge the fact that it was kind of a fluke deal because of the including Larry. He knew that.
Yeah.
He knew that, but that was cool to see. That was neat. And then he got a bunch of camera time for race two also because can he do it again? And, you know, the answer is probably not. But but it got him some more camera time, and that was cool.
That's awesome. 52 years old. Let's see. Where did he – oh. Yeah, he DNF'd. But his best lap time was in a – eighth place if you compare his lap time to the other people. So well, that's not true, sorry, because a couple other lap times beat like ninth place. Anyway, not important. But
and the last thing I would mention in Moto America is shout out to Lauren. She had a get off in the BTR, the build train race. Friend of the show. She suffered some injuries. It's looking like she's gonna be okay, but that's never fun. So I just want to say get well soon. And
yeah, and if you're listening, we had her on the show. Lauren Prince rides with BTR. Send her some love and good hopes, good wishes. We are all wishing the best for you. It was gnarly. That's all I can. But she's up. She's good. Well, I don't know if I can say good. But anyway, yeah, I agree. Hope you get better soon and get back out there. So,
okay, and now let's move it to MotoGP.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time left. We can definitely cover that. Who am I kidding? We got all the time in the world.
No, we don't. I got stuff to do, so.
Oh, well, all right. We can cover it. Yeah, MotoGP at the Red Bull Ring in Austria, home of the KTM.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Okay, first question, right out of the gate.
Uh-huh.
Last week I talked to you about the Mark Marquez magic.
Yeah.
What say you after this week?
I didn't really agree with you last week per se, but I did, but I don't, but I do. I don't know. I don't freaking know. I didn't watch the sprint. I just looked at the results because I was out riding on Saturday. And then this morning I watched the race. Some sort of weird, crazy start problem. Didn't ever get the full story on that personally. I know there's a story out there. Yeah, but the
start-stop device did not engage.
Okay.
But so, I just got to pick on Mark for just a minute. I'm honestly not trying to be a jerk to Mark, but just for our – just for our inner feud here, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The more I watch him, he won't quit. He won't quit. He just won't quit.
Yeah.
How come every time there's an incident on the track, he's one of the bikes? 9 times out of 10, when something happens on a MotoGP track, he's going to be there. He's going to be the guy that crashed. He's going to be the guy that caused the crash. He's going to be involved somehow.
I don't think that's true. I think you're getting tricked into thinking that statistic is true by the amount of camera time he freaking gets. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying he necessarily deserves it. But how much of that freaking race was watching Mark Marquez?
A lot.
Who was in 14th place.
and arguably coming up through the field and making moves and creating action. But did you see him elbow the tire to see how much air pressure was in it, see if it was ready for space?
Yeah, yeah, it did. That looked like it probably hurt, to be honest.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be fair. I'm gonna be fair with your comment. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You just blamed it on camera time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna back up a little bit, and I'm gonna acknowledge that might be truer than you even know, because there's a lot of things that happen on track, from a club level to a MotoGP level, that mm-hmm. never gets talked about unless you're directly involved. You know, the bump off of this guy, the whatever. But since the camera's always on him, anytime he touches anybody, it gets shown.
Yeah.
Or anytime he's touched.
Yeah.
I'll acknowledge that. I'll chew on that a little bit. But that being said, yeah, he did elbow a tire. Wow.
He did. And so I knew you were going to bring this up. There's a couple of things that I was sitting here watching the race, and I was like, ooh, what's Cole going to say tonight? What is he going to say? And I knew this was going to be one of them, because that's your boy, Jack Miller. That's part of it. But also, like, wow, Mark, to freaking, like, if you're going to make the pass, make the pass. If you're not, yeah, you don't need to be that close. And that being said, not just him, there's been other times. I think last year, late in the season, Jorge Martin got sucked into someone's slipstream one time, or someone did. There's been a couple instances of stuff like that. So you never really know, just because the commentators don't mention it. That stuff could absolutely be happening. Cool. But to watch a dude, yeah, come in a little too hot, go to back off, was about to maybe try and pass him, but realized he wouldn't pull the corner if he did. Backs off and then slams his tire into the back, or slams his elbow into the back tire. Woof. But did it really affect Jack?
No. I wasn't mad for Jack or otherwise, but there is definitely, and I applaud it. Don't get this twisted. But Mark rides aggressive as hell. Yeah. Always. And if you're riding that aggressive, and I don't mean that he's always pushing. I feel like he can try to save a tire. I feel like he's got all those skills. It's not like that. It's just, if there's a little gap, he's going to take it, where a lot of the riders would say, I'll wait till the next shot that I get, or I'll set him up different in the next one. He's just like, but I think I've done this before. Maybe I did it all last week, but I compare him to Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, in the good old 80s, when Mike Tyson was at the height of everything,
mm-hmm.
he could have faked somebody out by acting like he was throwing a punch, and they just, you know, soil themselves and fall down in the ring. It was over. And
yeah.
When you see on your board that Mark Marquez is behind you, however many years ago, you just knew you were done. And when he came and made the pass, you were already anticipating it. You just knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
He's lost that. These people, they have the same right to be on that track as he does anymore. But I watch the way he rides. There's a lot of times he shoves it in places, and I think he fully anticipates that other rider is going to flinch, stand the bike up, and get out of his way. And sometimes they don't anymore.
I get what you're saying. I've never thought about it before, so I don't know that I can, like, agree with you. But now that you mention it, thinking back to instances like that, maybe, maybe not. And the hardest part is you never know, right? And even if you interview him, you never know. But, you know, who knows what's actually, not just him, anyone out there, who knows what's actually going through their heads. But, you know, there was Rossi used to do that to people. In a different style, but Rossi would come up the inside of you, and would cut you off, but then end up taking the corner super wide, but it threw you off enough that he could pull it out and be good. And there was, I think it was Juan Mir that he tried that on near the end of his career. He pulled a Rossi move, and then like two corners back, Mir did it back to him or something like that. I just remember looking at the TV and being like, "Dude, he just out Rossied Rossi. What the?" So it's not a new thing, and I'm not saying you said it was either, but yeah. And is that because he lost his spark? Is it just because that's the caliber of rider we have out there now? Is it because there's actually, again, going back to camera time, who knows what moves other people are pulling also, maybe that's just how everyone's passing these days, and we just see it more blatantly with him. It's an interesting thought. I'll have to keep an eye out for it because, yeah, definitely I can't disagree with you on that. The magic thing that you're talking about, I agree. I was trying to come up with a rebuttal for you on that. Like throughout the week, you know, I was sitting there, I was like, how do I convince people that I am still a fan and that Mark Marquez still has it and he'll win the championship next year? Which I don't know that I can convince you of that, but I can say these couple things. These are the points that I had. I'm writing an essay on it. So these are my points for the essay. And a lot of these are going to feel like excuses, and they're going to feel like things that you've already heard all over Facebook, all over everyone's articles. Cool. And we're not just the Mark Marquez show, but these are my thoughts as a Mark Marquez fan and why I'm still invested and not trying to look for a new guy. That being the one, he is on your old equipment. Okay, cool. Is it that much slower? Don't know. Haven't seen the data myself. Not trying to say that, but it is a year older. Done. Two, on that year old equipment, every week, he's not been beat unless he crashes out, which he's done a lot. I'll give you that. But he's not been beat on anyone else on the same bike as him until the Ducati Race of Champions. But that's putting that aside. And then the third thing is that besides Morbidelli, who's on a factory bike current year, he's the only rider out there on a Ducati who's got their first year this year on a Ducati. And he's not just coming from another bike and a different bike 2 years before that and a different bike 2 years before that. He's coming from a bike that he raced for 11 years that literally got developed specifically around him. So much so that no one else could ride it. And then when he wasn't there, got thrown in the absolute trash and turned into a completely unrideable machine. And so, you know, I think about, you can almost relate this back to our tip, but falling into the laziness, falling into the muscle memory, falling into, you know, you're out there and racing track day on your commute, whatever it might be, there are points where you're riding based off something that you've trained your body to do. You spend that many years training your body to do things a certain way because that's what that motorcycle needs to produce results like he is producing this quickly against, with all the excuses. If you take every excuse out or you get rid of a couple of them, then yeah, no, he's not doing that great. The magic could be gone. And I can't quite argue on the magic, but I would argue for my sake, personally, it's the biggest reason I'm doing it, that there are a lot of factors that you do have to remember, and that what he is doing this year is, in my head, still quite impressive. Next year will be very interesting. And I think next year will be the point where everyone gets their final answer of there won't be many excuses next year. You can still make them like, well, it's only his second year on the Ducati and it's still a brand new, but like you can, yeah, you can make all that, but I can say that next year I will not be, I will let him ride his ride and I will judge his ride based off only that. So
fair enough.
That's my 2 cents on it.
Jack had a little sputtering moment.
Dude, Jack and Bender looked great. So here's quick breakdown. Watching the race, a few laps in. It's Austria. I'm sitting here. I'm watching it. My head goes to, rather than just watching the race and enjoying it, it goes to, all right, I got to pick this apart for the podcast tonight. I'm like, there's the KTMs. They're doing great. This is Austria. That's good. They look good. They're right next to each other. They're up in, what, fourth, fifth, I think they were at the time.
Yep.
Doing great. And I was like, man, it'd be a real bummer if Jack wrecks out. But he's doing good. Maybe he holds it. And I'm sorry that I had that thought. I'm sorry. I felt so bad because I was like, dude, if that actually had, like, I literally, and I'm not trying to just like make up stuff for the podcast. I was literally sitting there like, yeah, dude, they're doing so good. Maybe this is Jack's week. And I was like, unless he bends it like he normally does. And I caught myself as like, all right, shut up, just watch the race. And then literally a few laps later, there he's gone. So,
yeah, he's had some sputters. Sounds like the rumor mill's turning up that he's going to have a potential seat next year. We'll see what a restart does. It's got to be hard to stay focused when you're already fired, you know?
Yeah.
But, Jack, you can take it one of two ways. You can either go nuts, just start running into people once you secure your ride for next year. But you got nothing to prove got to get that contract signed. Maybe that'll clear his head and let him move on. He's been in a slump. You can tell in the interviews. You can tell in the interviews, just mentally, emotionally, everything, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you can even tell by his, you know, his social media. And it's so rough to be like, you got to keep posting. You got, like, can you imagine that? You go out and you just do absolutely terrible week after week. And I'm not trying to talk a bunch of crap on Jack, but he's not just him either. But like Juan Mir, right? Like every single week, this dude posts something on Instagram, and I'm sure it's not him. You know, it's his manager or whatever. But like, it's almost sounds like it's him. It's like a little bit of progress today. Not quite there yet, but we're feeling better and better every week. And I can just imagine him like, okay, yeah, I'll write this because I have to. And it chucks the phone to the ground. Just like, no, man, we're not feeling better. This is terrible. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't, he's off. And it's not just that he's off, but he's more than that. That's not Jack.
No.
I mean, it's and it sucks to go from factory Ducati doing pretty good to factory KTM to get told that like, hey, this rookie who actually quite honestly hasn't been what everyone said he was going to be.
First year, he's on an inferior bike.
Got it. Yeah.
On the mark once.
I'm right there with you. He ain't doing bad. For all of his excuses, 100%, I'm proud of Pedro. He's doing great. But he is not the rookie sensation that everyone said. Or at least hasn't shown up and done that yet.
But
he's okay, not doing...
I got to bring Mark back into this.
Okay. All right.
You said rookie sensation.
Yeah.
The reason you said rookie sensation is, as a Mark Marquez fan, you're setting the bar at come in, yep, win almost every race in your championship the first year.
Yep.
That's a rookie sensation.
Yep.
Has the game changed?
I don't know.
Could Mark have done that this year as a rookie coming in, even you gave him the best bike?
I don't know.
I think the game has changed.
Maybe. And it's why I'm not here to shit talk Pedro, but let's look at it. Let's look at it from Jack Miller's eyes. I've been doing this for years. I've given KTM all this work. I've done all this stuff for him. I rode on a Ducati. Now I'm getting kicked out by a rookie who only finished 13th today. Hasn't finished inside the top six since the third race, is what the commentator said today. And his performance aside, as a seasoned rider, getting told like, yeah, hey, we're going to let the rookie in because he's doing really great and we think he's going to be amazing. And then to see him not quite do amazing. And the reason why I will say he's not the rookie sensation everybody said is because everybody said he's the next Mark Marquez.
That's true.
They were comparing him to Mark Marquez. He's the next guy. That's great. You're absolutely right that it's a different game. There's no like... That's not even an argument. That's not even a question. Where it's a different game, I don't know that I can fully answer. I don't, without looking at data or riding the bike myself, you know, because I know what they were like 10 years ago too. But
okay, side question.
Yeah.
Was Mark Marquez better in his rookie year than he is now?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. Yeah. No, maybe. I don't know.
Because if we just dumb this down, if Mark Marquez, if we could just blink him in his rookie year this year, do you think he would have won the championship in all them races? Because if you say yes, then you believe he's a better rider than he is today, or was a better rider in his rookie year than he is today. And that is just can't be true. Physically, he's probably slowing down. He's admitted as much.
Yeah.
But think about that.
That's a good question, and I don't know that I can fully answer that today, but there are people in the world that have not only a gift, but, you know, whatever else you want to call it. And Mark, in his rookie year in MotoGP, like that, he was destined for that. And there's a switch in your brain that if you want to be good at something, and if it's racing, especially, and I'd say even more especially racing motorcycles, you got to be able to flip that switch. And that switch has to be labeled, don't bend it to win it, but get as close as you physically can. And I think that is something that the, you know, the hard line of that switch turns into a series of switches or a code or whatever, insert your job description here, whatever it is that you mess with, it's not just a key unlock. It's a four-digit code. And you got to get each one perfect to get that switch to go. And so as you get older and older and older, yeah, you've got more experience. You've got, he knows how to perfectly manage a tire, right? Because he can use just the right amount of tire to get around people and just the right amount of tire to put some fast laps in the beginning and whatever. All of that's great. But that's just one of those four-digit codes. And you develop all of those, you just have an on-off switch. And I think that's something that you lose over time.
Well, thank you, Easton, because this is what I've been trying to tell you since we met off of the Mark Marquez thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you, though.
What's that?
You know, we joke about why I have to yell at myself in the helmet. Mm-hmm. That's the code, man. I can't just turn it on and off anymore.
But did you ever turn it on and off?
Yeah.
In this sport?
No. I got into this sport too late. But in anything else in life, when you're younger, you're like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to go do that. I'll just switch gears and go in that direction. And you're a hundo. You go 100% that way or 100% that way. Mm-hmm. As you get older, it gets harder to go from zero to hero.
Yeah.
And stay focused, especially on, that's a whole nother topic. But you just, I'm just giggling over here because you basically are just explaining exactly what I've been saying to you forever and ever.
I don't think I ever disagreed with you on that.
That's probably true.
But yeah.
But how about that Anea Bastianini?
Yeah, he's almost there, but he's there every time. That's what's weird. Yeah. You know, we keep talking about it. I was actually going back, re-listening to some of our old episodes, and I was laughing. So we were talking about Anea and anyway, among other things that I was laughing at, us, you know. But yeah, he's here. The question is, I said last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever, he did amazing. It was beautiful. This week, not quite up to snuff with everyone, but not bad. Not far off. I'm not trying to.
Not bad. If he would have done that all year, then the conversation would even be different.
A lot different. Because he is sitting where in the standings right now, though?
Third.
And now he's finishing up in third.
Yes. The problem is it's too little too late because there's no way you're going to finish ahead of both of those guys consistently enough to overcome the points gap. That being said, we're seeing the last flash of his career before he potentially goes into the depths of despair and anything other than a Ducati.
Yeah, it's really
boys are proven that they don't have a bike either. KTM's proven that they don't have a bike. So maybe we got to do a full reset in 2027. I'm not convinced anybody's going to catch the Ducati with the new rule changes. They'll probably just write it out.
Yep. I don't want to say it yet because I don't want people to stop listening to our podcast because we just don't believe in MotoGP anymore. But I've been having those conversations with people at work that are like deep enough into motorsport to understand the words I'm saying, but don't know anything about MotoGP. And it's nuts to think about the fact that the era that we've been living in for me my entire life, right? Like as long as I've ever known an R1. Liter bike, that 1,000 cc's, right? I wasn't even around for the two-stroke days. That's like old man history stuff for people my age. And to think about that era ending is interesting. Unfortunately, it's not ending in a advancement. It feels like it's being choked off. Now, what comes of it? Who knows? Maybe we'll get some crazy freaking tire technology and everything else. It could be super cool, but it is the end. And then thinking about how that trickles down to, you know, you and I out on what start as road legal motorcycles, or at least something I can go buy. You know, when does that affect us and how? What does that look like? You know,
That's a question for you because I'm on the end of this thing, so I'll be fine.
Yeah. Average lifespan, 3 years. You got a year and a half left. But yeah, it's, you know,
you took me wrong. I'm not talking about racing careers. I'm talking about life.
Anyway,
I will be able to own a BMW S1000RR for the rest of my days if that's what I choose to do.
Yeah.
You 30 years from now might not want to drive a 2024 BMW S1000 because they quit making gas engines. But that's a whole other story for another podcast.
Maybe. Or maybe I want to because it's the only thing that's worth riding anymore.
See?
Who knows? Yeah. Maybe that's what we need. Need someone that's really good at predicting the future and someone that's seen motorcycles throughout the eras. We need all both of you to come together in one podcast with us. We'll talk about what the next 30 years of motorcycling looks like. But I think that'll close us out for tonight. It was a pretty good race.
No, it was a great race. The race was great. The sprint was okay. But yeah, I mean, it looks like Jorge Martin and Pecco Bagnaia are going to go back and forth again. Yep. Everything says it's Bagnaia's to lose because he's got the Ducati backing. His bike should keep getting improved. Who knows what will be held from the other guy? All the things.
Yep. But there's a lot of reasons. And it's also like if he secures this one, he's getting up into record territory, like big boy records. Yep. That makes sense. You know, getting to where his name can be on one of the greats. So, yep, it's but man, Jorge's on top of his freaking crap this year. He's got it pretty well nailed down, at least as well as Bagnaia from the look of it, because Bagnaia hasn't been a freaking robot as much either.
Let's go back and forth, and it's been fun.
It's been good.
The only thing to make it better if four or five other bikes could get up there and do the same thing.
Yeah, I had hope. Honestly, if Vinea had been there earlier and Marquez hadn't been doing not so good lately, basically if they just combined to one person, we'd be doing great. But yeah. Anyway, that is your MotoGP coverage for the week. Next week, we don't have MotoGP or Moto America.
Or World Superbike.
We get a week off of motorcycle racing, but we will still have an episode of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. And with that, we will say thank you. Thanks everyone for listening. Appreciate you having here, and we'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week. Thank you.